This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGM Radio, produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and we are here until 1 o'clock with a lot of ground to cover. We'll start with Farron Dogs, who is the founder and CEO of Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Their website is harrisonwallace.com. Farron, welcome to WGM Radio. How are you?
I'm real good, John. How are you?
Good. I'm not going to do another hour here on short selling. Because I don't want people to have their eyes glaze over, and yet I will ask you just to say I did. What's the big picture? What should we take away from this short selling phenomenon lately?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think this has been clearly unprecedented, and you're getting communities that are banding together to kind of quote stick it to the man, if you will, and I think we're going to find that there's going to be some regulatory controls put in place. At some point there may be share limitations in certain types of accounts, especially when you get things in play like they are right now. So, as far as, if we look at what's been happening on Reddit, community boards and that sort of thing. I mean, they're playing by the rules. It's not as if they're not. Right. But I think what will come out of this is there's going to have to be some element of control, especially when you're dealing with these smaller companies that are generally, as a rule, more thinly traded, not as actively traded. So it's hard to say.
This wasn't bad for GameStop, if you're talking about the companies that are actually being traded.
Oh, gosh.
This is the best thing that's ever happened to them and to the people that make Tootsie Pops, et cetera. Here's what I'm worried about. It sounds like you're saying it's okay for the big guys to play by these rules, but when you all gather together and get your pitchforks, well, now we need some regulation here.
I don't disagree with that at all. I think the playing field has to be the same for everyone. And it were some of these big hedge funds, that was their decision to be short the stock, right?
And there's my solution. Don't short the stock. Don't expose yourself.
Agreed. I don't argue with that at all. And furthermore, I think what will come out of this, I think you are going to find that shorting stock is not going to be quite so popular going forward. And they're going to have a lot more probably internal controls when you look at these big guys. Of how much stock they can be short and when they need to take that off the table.
The weird
thing
is,
that overall, I think, will be good for the overall market.
Why do you say that? Why do you say that?
Well, because sometimes I think some of these companies are held under pressure because of the shorts, and some of them maybe not. I mean, I guess Tesla, for example, Elon Musk was always out there talking about these people that were shorting his stock, and he became more of an irritant to them at some point, and obviously they're not doing that so much anymore. But it does tend to hold down sometimes the valuation of a stock if you get too many of these hedge funds that are just keeping it down. And so if you have a buyer that comes into it, they just never really get to see that stock move up because there's so much push back on the other side.
That is, everybody knows that this big fund is betting that this company is going to do badly. And so you might say, well, what do they know that I don't? And that minimizes the demand for that stock. It depresses it. I could see that the potential buyer of that stock or that company itself not appreciating that. Is that what you're telling me?
Sure. It is. And even if the company, in fact, comes out with good earnings and good revenues,
right,
if there's so much short against it and so much negativity against it, they just are maybe not getting the pop in their stock price that they richly deserve.
Jobless claims rose less than expected.
Mm-hmm.
That, in other words, is a good number. Is this have we broken the back of the unemployment claims, do you think?
I don't know. I think the second wave, if you look at Main Street, I think if you look at the second wave of some of the lockdowns that came in October, November, and even into the December, I think there's going to be some more unemployment into this first quarter. I think we're having kind of fits and starts with reopening in certain areas. And I think that, unfortunately, I think it's going to keep these numbers a little more elevated for another quarter or two. Not that I like to say that. I'd love to see more, you know, these people get back to work, but I'm seeing it, you know, as I travel around and as I talk to other colleagues and friends, the hospitality industry, the cruise line industry, restaurants, bars, you think of all the employees that, for example, would have been at the Super Bowl being vendors and that type of thing, and the amount of money that would have flown through those economies, that's not happening, and it's not happening in all the sports venues, not to mention concerts and that sort of thing. So I think we have a little bit more to go through this, unfortunately, but I think we are getting through it. And I think every time someone gets a vaccine shot, you know, it's their own little stimulus, if you will. You know, it's a little bit more of a confidence booster for the general public. And I think as those vaccines roll out a little bit heavier across the U.S., I think we'll start to see things really shape up.
Yeah, I sure agree with you on that. Theron Doggs is the founder and CEO of Harrison Wallace Financial Group, harrisonwallace.com. Theron, nice to talk to you today.
Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm glad you joined us. Ian Schur joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ian, of course, a regular guest on the show, is an editor-at-large at CNET. Hi, Ian. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm watching one of the biggest crazy things I've seen on the stock market ever right now.
Gosh, what's that, Ian? I haven't heard.
Oh, you know, it's just a normal, really, day. GameStop is going insane, and there's this huge battle between the investors on Wall Street who are betting GameStop, this video game retailer that most people had thought was not long for this world. There's this huge battle between them betting against the company's future and these traders on social media who are completely fighting up against them. And it's caused the stock to swing wildly, like I've never seen.
What I don't understand is why they picked this stock or this time. I mean, it's really not about that stock, right? It's about, if I may, is this it? A bunch of people who are tired of seeing the giant hedge funds with billions of dollars of assets able to move the market, if you will. And they're saying, no, if we all get together, we can push that price up and they'll have to take it in the shorts. Hooray, I guess, for them. But why that stock and why now?
Yeah, what's really happened in a lot of ways is that social media people on Reddit, especially the social media site, they realized that the bets against GameStop by these what are called short sellers, right? Basically, people betting against the company and betting the stock will fall. They realized that those bets were overplayed and they had become too aggressive. And so their theory was that if they could push the stock high enough by buying it themselves and getting other friends to get in and buy it, that they could force Wall Street to recalibrate all of their bets. And that's exactly what's happened. This is really a story about Wall Street hubris and then running up against people who just saw a mistake that Wall Street had made that is worth billions and billions of dollars. It's really fascinating to watch. It also means that we may not see something like this very much in the future because this was a quirk of GameStop in particular. There are other stocks as well who are being bet heavily against and are caught up in this, like AMC and BlackBerry and Bed Bath & Beyond and all these others. But they are not seeing as much action, in part because the bets from Wall Street are not as dramatic as they were with GameStop.
Should I care who wins?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, for me, it's watching the roller coaster as it goes. I think that what will be interesting is that if, first off, somebody is going to win and lose at the same time because eventually the stock's going to return back to whatever normal would be because GameStop is not worth this crazy amount of money that it is. I mean, the stock has gone up literally 14,000%. That's not a typo. And so that's not realistic. So eventually the stock will fall. The question is, will the Wall Street people win or will the day traders win? And either way, I think the benefit we're going to get out of this is that it may force these people who are short sellers, who are often seen as bottom feeders, to change their approach a little bit, which may be good, may be bad. I don't know.
But won't this also bite some of those Reddit day traders, if you will, in the butt too? If if you are buying, and people are still trying to buy GameStop now, and it's at $400, it's not going to go to $1,000. It's going to go back to $40. So some of the, they're buying on the high side. Aren't some of these Davids going to lose their money?
Well, these Davids are betting that the Goliath is still to come. One of the funny things about this is that this whole process, which is called a short squeeze, where you effectively force Wall Street to cover their bets and have to recalibrate, they think it's not done. They think that there is actually far more money that's out there, in part because Wall Street overextended its bad bets. And so they think the stock could go up to 1,000, 5,000, whatever. Now, I'm not an expert who is, who recommends anything like that.
Yeah.
And also, it's hard to actually see that happening personally, but it is, that's why they're still jumping in, is that they think the short sellers have not been cleaned out enough yet.
And maybe the short sellers will learn. What do I know? I knew nothing about this 2 days ago, but maybe the short sellers should have taken their loss last week. They should have just said, okay, it's not going to go the way we wanted it to. We'll go ahead and sell these shares and take our losses instead of, because it keeps going up and up and up, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about short selling is that when you're buying a stock normally, the money you lose potentially is all the money you put in the stock. With short selling, you can lose infinite amounts of money because as long as the stock goes up, you're losing money. So at one point, the short sellers can get out of it, but you have to consider how many billions of dollars are on the line. It is very likely we're going to see a couple of hedge funds shut down because of this. And there are probably going to be some very rich people who are very poor at the end of this. And, again, you may not care, you may care, but this is a very interesting thing about how Wall Street works. And you have to remember, short sellers are the people who identified what was wrong with the housing market back a decade and a half ago before any of us saw it. And they've identified bad behavior in companies. Short sellers have a reason for being, but there's also a lot of anger, I think, toward institutions and toward the system and the banks that we're seeing from these social media traders as well.
I'm not an expert. My wife and I have a certificate of deposit at a savings and loan, so this is a little over our head. Let's talk about smart grocery carts. By the way, there was a nice video on CNET.com that I watched late last night, a couple people talking about this, and the woman, as I recall, was saying that short selling is not intrinsically bad, unethical. She thought that it serves a legitimate purpose.
It does.
And so if you want to dive into that, CNET.com, smart grocery carts, what's going on there?
Yeah, so one of the really interesting things I think that's been going on with technology lately is that a bunch of companies have started to try and kind of change the way that we buy groceries. It's super cool. So Amazon, for example, has a program where you can go into one of their stores. There are a couple in Chicago, I think, and you can take your phone, you can scan it, and then it'll watch you as you go around the store. And you take a cookie off the tray, and you walk out, and the system says, oh, he took a cookie, $2.50. So that system already exists. And then Amazon started creating grocery carts that basically do the same thing for their, they built a grocery store for that.
Yeah.
Well, now Kroger, which is based in Minneapolis, I believe, they are now testing their own type of grocery carts called Krogo. Okay, I'll give them that. That's a pretty good one. And what it does is that it's a little more than what Amazon's doing. It actually has a built-in scale, which is something I run across quite a bit when I'm using these apps to check out. I need a scale for that. And then also it'll have a tablet so that you can have your grocery list. It can direct you through the store. I always get lost. That's pretty cool. And a couple of other things. So it's interesting to see these types of things going on. I don't know if they're going to actually end up anywhere, but it's super cool to see, hey, could we get rid of grocery lines? Because my life would be way better if we did.
My life would be way better if I was able to just scan in my list and then the cart tells me where the stuff is. I would pick up half the time that I lose in the store.
Absolutely. I think all of us would. And it's funny because for years we were told about how the grocery stores are created in a way to keep us there, right? They keep the peanut butter far away from the bread. Well, this could be fixed, right?
Website feature faces from Parler's Capital Riot videos. I'm just looking at your headline, but I saw the story. So there's a lot of video out there, and you can tell who's committing the crimes on the Capitol. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so what's gone on is that because a number of internet sleuths actually downloaded all of those videos that the, I guess the word terrorists, what are we calling them, that attacked the Capitol?
Yeah.
That when they downloaded all those videos, they actually went through and went through every video and captured the faces of the people in those videos and have posted them online individually. And this is all because the FBI put out a call asking, hey, please help us identify these people. Well, this website, Faces of the Riot, it actually has 6,000 images taken from those videos that now have been removed from the internet, but they were able to get before they went. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. The FBI and the Department of Justice say that they are not done arresting all of these people. And I, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how this all ends up. But there is definitely a lot of interest among especially people on the internet who, you know, are very angry at the extreme elements of that group, right? The neo-Nazis and all that, to try and take them down.
What do you make of that, Ian? Because I know crowdsourcing is tantalizing, but we got it wrong with the Boston bombers once
yep.
upon a time. So is there the danger here that we're going to ostracize or worse the wrong people?
It is incredibly dangerous, and it's part of the reason I personally cringe when I see these types of things. But one of the things I think this also speaks to is the anger that a lot of people have toward the government for allowing these people to basically walk away from the Capitol after they ransacked it. And I think that is why you're seeing so much interest in being a part of this, is that people want a sense of justice out of what had happened. And I think that they're still trying to seek it out, and that's where this is coming from.
Ian Schur is an editor-at-large at CNET. Always a pleasure, Ian. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Ian will join us this week, next week at this time. 12:35, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. The other day we told you about a couple of guys from the University of Chicago. Nick Hamburger was one and Zach Schreier was another. They dropped out at the U of C to go into business on their own, making an egg-based chip. Instead of you eating something that's flour-based or some other product, this was a more protein-forward snack that was good for one of them, Zach, because he's diabetic. And so while they were eating one day the residue of an egg omelet and noticed the crisp trim on the side, they thought, oh, I wonder if we can make chips out of this. And so they have been. They went on Shark Tank the other day to see if they could get funding and a buy-in from one of the sharks. We told you we'd catch you up on that story. Nick joins us again now on WGN Radio. Nick, welcome back. How are you?
It's great to be back. Doing well. We had an exciting time last Friday.
What was the outcome?
Yeah, so we ended up getting a deal from the guest shark, who is was Daniel Lubetsky, the founder of Kind Bars, and he's investing $200,000 in cash and a $200,000 line of credit. And we didn't have to give away a crazy amount of the company, too, which is exciting. So we are thrilled with the outcome.
I was wondering about that. What percentage of the business does he now own?
Yeah, 10%.
Now, that sounds reasonable to me. If 200,000 plus 200,000 is good for you, is that a big deal for you, $400,000?
Yeah, you know, it's helpful. We actually have raised other funding as well prior to this, but it always helps to have a little bit more than planned. Obviously, when we went on the show, we didn't put that into our projections that we would get a deal. It was kind of just an extra bit of cash we weren't planning on, so we're going to spend it on hiring someone for retail sales and marketing to go along with more retail launches.
What does being on that show mean for you? I mean, maybe 200,000 isn't the point. It was that you were on Shark Tank and they said yes. What's happened since then? Has your phone been ringing?
Yes, my email mostly, even more than the phone. And no, exactly. The exposure and the business impact is even a bigger deal.
Stay there now. All of a sudden, you kind of cut out there. Sorry,
I just switched to my AirPods, but I'm back here. The exposure is even a bigger deal than the deal itself, and we've had a crazy amount of sales. We've done a third of what we did in 2020 in the 6 days now since the episode.
Wow. Say that again.
We've done a third of last year's sales in 6 days.
And last year wasn't bad for you. The product we're talking about is called Quevos, Quevos. Am I spelling that correctly?
exactly.
Quavos, and it's a chip, the way I described, it's egg-based. You guys were kind enough, or somebody did, to send us a little case of them, and there are all kinds of different flavors, like a honey mustard, a sweet barbecue, a dill. I went through those. I got to tell you, when I opened it up, I was a little skeptical, because it's an egg-based thing. I don't know. I thought what I had was delicious. And maybe it being egg-based is helpful to you, but if you said, "It's we won't tell you what it's based, just eat it because it's dang good," that would have been enough for me. It was absolutely tasty. Now, if this is a better choice for me because, or maybe the only choice for me because it's egg-based, more power to you. But at the end of the day, don't you think, Nick, it's got to be really good tasting. I think you've got a home run there.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you love them and glad you were able to dig into the bags we sent. Exactly, like it, you know, if we were in the smoothie category, maybe it can taste bad. It's healthy and it's fun. Yeah. But this is a snack, right? It's got to taste good, and we've been putting a lot of work into that over the years to keep improving.
You were talking to us about the product development, too. I mean, how old are you, Nick?
22.
I'll pause while we let that sink in. I mean, so, you know, how much do you know about the development of a food product? Here's some things I'd like to see going forward. A larger chip or a thicker chip? How challenging has that been?
You know, it's been tough. It took us over 2 years at the beginning to get to our first market-ready product, and we've poured even more even since then. And so, you know, we didn't know a lot about food development, but it's been a lot of trial and error, and we've brought in some consultants when we've needed to on the recipe. But, yeah, just trying thousands of ingredients, really, over several years.
Because I don't know what the malleability or the connectivity of the tissue is that you're using when you're working with the egg as opposed to flour. You know, we're used to tortilla chips and things like that and how that can be shaped and molded any way you want. Your chips are little squares. They are smaller than a wheat thin. Wheat thins tend to be more wheat thin. So they remind me in shape and consistency mostly of a wheat thin, but maybe just a little smaller. And it's got a nice powdery finish on there with ranch seasoning or whatever. And I just thought they were really, really good. They're available in Whole Foods, right?
Yep, Whole Foods in Illinois, also in Vitamin Shoppe stores across the country. And
he's clicking out a little bit here with his pods. You still?
Yeah, I think it's, yes. So Whole Foods in Illinois and Vitamin Shoppe across the country, as well as Amazon for online sales.
Okay. Now, feel free to send over more if you're just interested in getting rid of some inventory. You know, maybe it's sort of cluttering up your office. But, Nick, you've done real well there. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was great to be on.
Yeah. It's, Quavos is the name of the company, and it's Quavos.com, Quevos.com. This is a Chicago product, Nick Hamburger and also Zach Schreier. It's 12:42 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Okay, let's go into the WGN Radio Newsroom. And with more business news, here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's same-store sales in the U.S. climbed 5.5% in the October to December period, pumped up by new menu items like spicy chicken McNuggets. Same-store sales dropped 1.3% worldwide in the quarter. McDonald's says it plans to open more than 1,300 new restaurants globally. The state of Illinois is acquiring an office building in Chicago's West Loop for just over $73 million. The building at 555 West Monroe is set to become the new office space for more than 1,000 state employees currently working in the city. State officials cited staff consolidation and cost-saving measures as primary reasons for the purchase. The acquisition is also part of a long-term plan to eventually leave the Thompson Center. The state currently leases office space in 7 properties in the Loop at a cost of $21 million. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Two things top of mind for me, Amy. I meant to get to this earlier with Ian. I didn't. Apple's iPhone 12. Do you have any news on how well that did?
Yeah, so I've been, you know, watching a lot of quarterly earnings reports come out, as I mentioned earlier in the week. And Apple did very, very well, mostly due to the iPhone 12 sales. You know, this is the word that gets thrown around a lot when we talk about Apple in particular is super cycle. And what that essentially means is the day a phone comes out, not everyone is going to buy that, but people are going to start upgrading their way towards that phone. So each new iPhone release kind of triggers this upward waterfall of kind of trading up to get better and better phones that people do. And so we've seen this with every big iPhone release, and this seems to have triggered the same. So they beat Wall Street estimates. Wall Street analysts were predicting about $103 billion in quarterly revenue. They came in over $111 billion. I mean, once you get into the billions, it's kind of even hard to fathom that number. But nonetheless, they beat the Wall Street estimates by quite a lot. The posted earnings per share were up 35% from the same period the prior year. So that's 17% growth year over year to $65.6 billion. I mean, again, beating analyst estimates and all due to that iPhone 12, because there were so many new things and pieces of innovation in that phone that were a lot different than the last two that were released.
Wow, props to them for, after the past 12 months, being able to put out such a good product and turn such a good profit.
Yeah, truly. I mean, I think we'll kind of take our good news where we get it these days, because there's been so many sectors that have just been impacted so badly, you know, particularly in hospitality and retail. But when we're looking at products like this, I mean, some refer to the iPhone as one of the best-selling tech products of all times. Because if you think about the iPhone story, it changed the way we yeah. use phones forever. So interesting to see where they continue to do with that and where they continue to go with it.
Midst of a pandemic, and nobody seemed to have any money or confidence that the money would be there if they did. And a $700 phone was flying off the shelves, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we saw a lot of that. So, you know, the super cycle I was referring to, a lot of that was helped by the carriers. So the AT&T and Sprint and Verizon allowing people to kind of pay that out. So you don't have to fork over the $700 all at once. You can kind of pay it out per month. And it's sort of a like a lease to own kind of an arrangement that helped a lot of people step into a phone and upgrade their phone when they otherwise couldn't afford it.
McDonald's did not have a great quarter, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, there's kind of two numbers we have to look at when we look at McDonald's. There's the global overall, and then there's the U.S. numbers. And the U.S. numbers, the same store sales, are up 5.5%. They've done a lot of promotions. There's been some marketing campaigns. They've done a lot of innovations in U.S. stores that helped them weather the pandemic. But globally, the story is a little bit different because of different countries had different kind of restrictions. People were going out in some places, not going out in others, things like that. But overall, we have seen this, you know, this big lift for the U.S. market, which has helped the overall number to not be quite as much of a hit as it would have otherwise been. You know, of course, when we talk about McDonald's, the kind of what's happening in the background is the relationship with franchisees. That's kind of been this ongoing thing because McDonald's scaled back their menu a lot, and a lot of franchisees said, hey, you know what? Actually, I kind of love this. It's easier to do. There's less things on the menu for me to have ready and fresh at all times, so this makes my profitability a lot better. When things started to be added back to the menu, there was a lot of pushback. So there's been some kind of ongoing tension with franchisees and who's in charge of keeping the restaurant safe and things like that. But despite all that, U.S. stores did perform well and were up.
American Airlines, Southwest Airlines, catch us up on the airline business.
Yeah, you know, another set of quarterly earnings reports I was watching really carefully. Southwest had a call with investors earlier today to kind of talk through it because Southwest posted its first annual loss since 1972. I mean, when you think about that, that's such a huge amount of time that Southwest has been profitable on that annual basis, and it just wasn't the case. Not surprising at all. We saw how badly airlines were impacted by the pandemic. American also reported a record quarterly loss, and really both of them really felt like there's still some rough times ahead. There's vaccine optimism, but the period in the middle is kind of where they're all looking. So American posted a net loss of $2.2 billion in the fourth quarter. So that's revenue down about 64%. So that's a little over $4 billion compared with about $11 billion the year prior. When we look to Southwest, again, that first loss since 1972, that this number that they shared really stuck out to me. Their average cash burn of what they expect just to keep the train on the tracks and keep running is $17 million a day in the first quarter. And they're saying that's about, you know, lessened demand. And this is a time, January and February, when there's not a lot of travel. Summer is usually the peak season, less travel in January and February after the holiday time. So combining those two things, you know, they're saying we're still going to be burning through about $17 million a day in cash reserves just to get through. So I'll be very interested to see that second and third quarter reports from the airlines to really paint this full picture of you know, how their rebound is going. Because I think that's really the next step is, will people start booking tickets for summer travel now that we're rolling out the vaccine? Both airlines expressed, or leadership rather, expressed some frustration that the vaccine rollout isn't going faster. You know, we've talked about the kind of bottlenecks that they've hit. We've all, you know, seen the reporting around that for various reasons. But the airlines are hinging or hedging a lot of their, you know, summer bets on that, saying, hey, the faster we get these people vaccinated, the faster they're going to be wanting to travel, particularly looking at business travel, which was such a big driver, but also international travel, especially American, had very, very big international routes, some that they did several times a day that were huge cash drivers for them. So they're really hoping that vaccine campaigns can start to open up some international borders and get those big revenue drivers back. But we're probably not going to see that until Q2 or Q3.
I don't know if Valentine's Day is a big driver in the economy the way Halloween is and Christmas is, but I see the Kraft has got something up their sleeve, right?
Oh, boy, John, I don't know about this one. We talked, if you remember, right before Halloween, there was a pumpkin mac and cheese, and we weren't real sure about how that was going to go. I'm not real sure about this one. This is a pink candy-flavored mac and cheese for Valentine's Day. It is pink. It is supposed to taste like candy. I cannot imagine what that would taste like. But this is a, you know, a social media effort. They're hoping people will Instagram this because it's this bright pink mac and cheese, and maybe talk about what it tastes like, unclear on that. But Kraft has been doing a lot of creative things. They made a ketchup red pandemic puzzle. They had a campaign that asked people to draw ketchup very recently that had tons of people Instagramming and tweeting pictures of ketchup bottles that they had drawn. So they're being very creative to try to empower people to kind of do some of their brand evangelism for them and talk about the brand. Again, not real sure how pink candy mac and cheese would taste, but I'm willing to try anything once, I suppose.
You're not sure how it tastes. I'm worried how it even looks. That just doesn't sound appealing to me on any front, but I don't want to blow out anybody's candle, man. If it's working for you, thumbs up. Just don't invite me to the table. Amy Guth follows food and mac and cheese in the airlines, among other things. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.